Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor LaCane. Today we'll talk about healing the racial divide in America. Talking about race is sometimes uncomfortable, and we often avoid the subject because we are concerned about being made to feel bad or saying the wrong thing. Yet a compassionate conversation about race can help free us as individuals and as a country for a better future. Here today to talk with us about healing the racial divide in America is Milagros Phillips, who specializes in transforming relationships between the races with compassion. Milagros is the author of a new book, 11 Reasons to Become Race Literate. She also designed the transformational program called Race Demystified, a compassionate approach to the healing of America. A powerful approach that leaves participants empowered and hopeful that she has brought to Fortune 100 companies, colleges, universities, and communities throughout the country. Ms. Phillips' historically grounded approach for looking at race gives us a new understanding of our current challenges, raises our awareness, and develops new approaches that help improve our personal and professional relationships. Ms. Phillips was the founding executive director of the National Resource Center for the Healing of Racism. She served as expert in residence for the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. She developed an approach for congressional conversations on race in Washington, D.C., and co-facilitated that program for 3 years. Milagros Phillips, welcome back to All Together Now.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be back, Eleanor. Thank you so much for taking the time to have a conversation with me about this very important topic.
Well, I am so happy you're here because I did, for our listeners to know, I did take your course on demystifying race or transforming race in America, and it really has been so meaningful and helpful to me. So I love to share what you're doing with our listeners because it's a difficult topic, but you are so compassionate and so knowledgeable and so sensitive. You're just the best person I know to address this topic.
Thank you. It's very flattering. So, thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, I just read your new book, 11 Reasons to Become Race Literate, and I'm really excited about it. It's just, it's amazing that you pack so much into a short book, and explain to our listeners, why did you write this book?
Well, I'm glad you used the word short, because I really wanted it to be a short book. It's a very complex topic. It is a very toxic topic, and I wanted to capture people's attention just long enough to get them to think about race a little bit differently. So I decided, you know, that, so that's one part of the story. The other part of the story is that I have a longer book that I've been working on for years, and I just kept thinking I need to do something that's just, that's short, that's quick and to the point, and continue to work on the other book, while at the same time telling myself I really don't have patience to do a long book, you know.
Right. So and people are more likely to read something that's easier to, you know, to get through.
Yeah. Well, I wanted it to, I designed it so that people would be able to read it in less than an hour, probably about a half hour or so, because I didn't want to take up a whole lot of people's time. But I wanted the book to give people an idea of some of the missing pieces to our, what I call the race puzzle, and to get them to think about race from a slightly different perspective. And also to think about race from the perspective of being able to have a more intelligent conversation. So I wrote the book because after 25 years of doing healing racism work, doing seminars, you know, I've had way over 1,000, probably a couple thousand people go through my seminar over the years, and I wanted people to have a sense of what happens in that seminar through a very condensed, very short book. So I wrote it because what I realized over, you know, these past 25 years is that people just don't have enough good information with which to make the transformation into a different experience of race. And so so I wrote it in the hopes that people will be able to do their own research, to look at their own personal history, and to just really open themselves up to having a new experience with this topic.
Yes, and I think you've succeeded in that wildly. I think you've done a masterful job. And, you know, this is a topic many people look forward to a discussion of race about as much as we look forward to going to the dentist. And I myself dreaded these conversations for years because I was afraid I'd say the wrong thing, I'd be attacked as a racist, or I'd just be guilt-tripped about having lived a life with white privilege, even though I come from kind of a poor to lower middle-class family. But, you know, still the white privilege thing there get thrown in my face. And, in fact, that did happen at some racial sensitivity training I went to. I was like, this really is not helpful. But participating in your workshop helped me feel a lot more comfortable talking about race, both my own experience with race and kind of thinking about my own story from that lens, and then also the whole story of America from that lens. But I think the hardest part in this work is how do we get people to the table for the conversation, since it's so emotionally charged.
Right, yeah, and that's, you know, that's always the trick. This is one of those things where I sort of compare it to people's personal growth journey, which is you. Well, let me look at it from an even different perspective. You know, your parents can tell you things when you're growing up about life, and they can tell you and tell you and tell you, and you just kind of go, yeah, 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 and then you experience it, and it becomes something that's grounded in you. And you don't understand what your parents are saying to you until you actually experience it. And this is the, sort of the same thing. People come to the conversation on race when they're ready for a conversation on race. And you can't force people. You can't make them come to that realization. Unfortunately, sometimes people come to that conversation because something horrible has just happened, or because you know, something happened at their job, or they've been accused of being a racist, or they've been victim of some prejudice, words or actions, or something has happened. So you know, people come to the table to have this conversation already charged, because they're not having the conversation prior to these experiences. They're not making this part of a regular conversation. And so it's a difficult conversation to have, because when people come to it, it's almost like they're forced into that conversation. And the reason for that is because there's so much fear around having the conversation.
Right, exactly. And I think part of why what you do, it works so well, both your program and also reading your book, is you come from such a compassionate approach. I mean, you're not trying to guilt trip anybody. You're not trying to beat anybody up. You're really reaching to help us all get a deeper understanding of what is our story here and how does race influence our story and our lives, and with the understanding that we can shift that, and when we shift it, you know, free ourselves, free our communities, free our countries, have better personal relationships. And I think your compassionate approach is absolutely the way to move forward.
Well, one of the things that I learned through my personal journey, excuse me, is that we don't know what we don't know. When I first awakened to my own personal journey around race was because, you know, as I said, we often come to it because we're in pain of in one form or another. And so I was in a lot of pain around, you know, just the realization of well, I'm doing all the right things. Why are things not working well for me? You know, like what's really going on? And then just really uncovering, just really peeling back the layers, not just within myself, because my journey really started with me and really looking at myself, like what am I doing wrong and what, you know, blah, 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 blah. And as I expanded the knowledge of self, I came face to face with the history of the country. And what I realized as I began to really uncover this history was that I didn't really know this history. And one of the things that I remember some of my first experiences with this, I was married at the time, and my ex-husband used to read from the slave narratives. And I remember being so upset when he did that, because I just found, first of all, the information terribly disturbing. But then also because I wasn't ready to face what that meant for me. And the other thing was that I was in such denial myself that I was like, well, what does that have to do with today? Which is a question that a lot of people ask. They go, why do we have to talk about stuff that happened over 100 years ago? You know, and the reality is that the symptoms of what happened 1, 2, 3, and 400 years ago are unfortunately still with us. And that's why the conversation has to happen. And so when we find out what we don't know, we start to put the pieces of our personal puzzle around this topic in place. And when that starts to happen, the conversation changes. Because one of the things that we start to really internalize is that, okay, this is not my fault. This is not the fault of anyone who is alive today that we can say, well, you know, this person or this particular group's fault. This is something that we've inherited. And we've inherited with a lot of misinformation and a lot of missing information. And so we try to put this puzzle together in our minds, in our schools, in our hospitals, in the research that we do, and nothing seems to fit. Well, it can't, because we're missing so much of the information. And so a lot of my personal work has been around doing research, you know, doing a lot of reading and looking into this and looking into that. And also because I tend to be very much a holistic thinker, I really believe that what affects our minds affects our body. What affects our body affects our lives. And so I have looked at this issue of race from a lot of different perspectives, from the perspective of, you know, what we believe and how what we believe affects us, right through to the perspective of, you know, what's going on in our physical body. What are the memories that are with us that we are conscious of and memories that we are not conscious of that still affect us? And I wrote about that in the book as well. I talked about it from the perspective of John Bradshaw's work in, you know, just looking at family secrets and things like that. So I've looked at it from a lot of different perspectives. The other thing is that I wasn't born in the U.S. Now, this is also interesting as well. I was born in the Dominican Republic, and so I'm actually Latina. The thing is that I am an Afro-Latina. I'm a Latina of African descent. And so my experience in the U.S. has not been the typical Latina experience. My experience has been more of an African-American experience, because people judge you by the external appearance that you have, and they don't really know anything about you. And that, even that little bit of story is very telling in and of itself, in that you may look at someone and formulate a story in your head about who that person is, where they come from, what their ancestry is, and so on and so forth, but you don't really know. And you won't know unless you ask. And you can't ask unless you have a relationship. And you can't have a relationship until you approach the person.
Right. And I want to get back to that link you just made about John Bradshaw and family secrets, because I think that's really a great kind of framework for understanding some of what's happening in America today. Before that, we get there, though, I just want to ask you, you know, you talk about the 11 reasons to become race literate. What does it mean to be race literate, and why does it matter?
Absolutely, yeah. So in my book, race literacy really speaks about the education that is needed by all Americans to know their history, to really understand that pretty much the history we've gotten in school is very incomplete. I mean, I think just about every adult knows that. But one of the things that makes it so incomplete is this huge part of African-American history that people treat as if it were another history or something that belongs somewhere else, or it's not part of American history, when in reality it is very much part and parcel of American history and needs to be treated that way. So the secret is that we don't know what we don't know, again, right? And part of what we don't know is that very important part of American history that has been labeled as African-American history and separated, segregated, the way that we've segregated people from one another. We've also segregated the history. And by doing that, we really have done people a disservice. So what happens with family secrets is that, let's say someone was a thief, okay, like someone's great-grandfather or grandfather or something was this great thief, and they did some pretty horrific stuff. And no one ever talked about that. There was the generation that had that experience had shame, they had guilt. They had, you know, because grandfather or great-grandfather got caught, right? And put away somewhere, right? So no one talked about great-grandfather. So now, so that generation had the guilt and the shame and the trauma of whatever that experience was of knowing that, you know, we're really good, hardworking, honest people, and yet there was this grandfather or this person who did X, Y, and Z, okay? So in comes the next generation, and the next generation doesn't know what happened with grandfather because no one talks about grandfather or great-grandfather, right? No one talks about him. And every time a question is asked, people act strangely. They avoid the question. They change the subject. They just don't know how to handle telling the younger generation what happened with the previous generation. And so the younger generation can feel that something's off, something's wrong. They don't quite know what it is. And then they start acting out. And so they behave as if they had the same traumatic experience that the original generation had. In fact, what's been found is that the second generation seems to act more traumatized than the first generation. And my theory around that is because they don't know what really happened. All they know is that there's some cloud that no one can pierce, okay? Then comes the following generation. And the following generation still has this strange kind of disconnection with their history, with their family history, because nobody would talk about grandpa or great grandpa, and no one is telling the story, and no one, and so they behave in certain ways. Again, no one asks, or if they ask, they get ignored, or, you know, so there are all these things that we do, that we put in place to be able to keep the secret a secret, even when we don't know what the secret is.
Right, and then if there's ever any attempt to find out about it, there's often kind of a chilly silence, and you learn quickly it's too uncomfortable and just avoid that conversation.
Yeah, that conversation is taboo. Well, it's the same thing that's happened with race. There's a lot of shame around the way that people were treated when they were enslaved, and there's shame on the descendants of the people who were enslaved around that topic, and there's shame around the people who were the enslavers. Now, it's very interesting because a lot of people say, well, my family had nothing to do with that. You know, my family came here in the early 1900s, and they had nothing to do with slavery and so on and so forth. And that's very true. That's part of that person's history. The reality, though, is that depending on what part of the world they came from, they are still benefiting from what was established hundreds of years ago without understanding that. Here's where the family secret comes in, right? They're benefiting without understanding what it is that they're benefiting from. So it makes no sense to them when people start to talk about race, racism, slavery, and all of the aftermath of that. That makes no sense to them. They want nothing to do with that conversation because from their perspective, slavery and all of those things had nothing to do with them. So it makes it difficult to have the conversation because they don't have the background. They don't know that when the enslaved were set free, a lot of them headed up north to places like Chicago and New York and Pennsylvania, and they settled in those places and they worked in the factories. And as the Europeans started to come in, because we opened the doors for Europeans to start coming in during the late 1800s and well into the early 1900s. So when those Europeans started to come in, the blacks that had come from the south and were now working in those factories up in the north were used to train the incoming employees, European employees. They were let go, and the Europeans got their jobs. And no one ever talks about that, you know. And so those are, you know, those are little pieces of information that are part of the history and that is really important to understand. Because when we're talking about Boston, when we're talking about New York, when we're talking about Philadelphia, when we're talking, you know, these major cities, particularly along the Eastern Seaboard, who were receiving the onslaught of Europeans coming in, they feel like they weren't part of that history, but they actually were, because they were the ones that were processing and making the fabrics. A lot of the fabrics were made up north, remember, from the cotton that was harvested by the African descendants in the south.
And so, yeah, I like the comparison to John Bradshaw and the family with secrets, because just like in a family, you need to kind of know what the secrets are and address it to really kind of heal some of the separation and fractures that are happening in a family. And that the parallel here being that we in the U.S. have a history around race that definitely influences the present, and it's only when we know it and we see the whole picture we can deal with reality instead of mysterious shadows that seem to be biting us from in the unknown.
Is that what you mean
by race literacy, by knowing our story, so we call these kind of hidden things up to the front and deal with it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So race literacy is about learning some of these we don't know what we don't know pieces. It's really important. The other part about race literacy is understanding our own history with race. Regardless of whether you grew up in a multicultural environment or you lived in a very segregated environment, that's your history. That's an important part of how you created and established your worldview. And so understanding that your personal history is part and parcel of the bigger history and is inextricably connected to the country that you were born into, that's really important. And it's important to honor that history because it's what it does is it gives us perspective. And it allows us to be grounded in something that is real. And, when we're grounded in something that's real, we're not making up stories. We're not living in myths. We're not mystified and, having this fog in front of our eyes. And then when someone wants to talk about a subject that's uncomfortable, we glaze over or we just, we just literally shut down. When we understand our own history and we put that in perspective with the larger history, then we are able to understand ourselves better and understand our country better. So being race literate means that you don't just learn the history that you were taught in school, but that you open yourself up to learn the history of all these other people who made up this country and who are still part of this country, and really looking at what that means when you start to look at African-American history, Native American history, the history of the Mexicans in the in what we call the continental USA. There's a lot of what we now consider U.S. was part of Mexico. And so we look at people crossing the borders, and, you know, I look at people, and I think of the butterflies. I think of the monarch butterflies who go all over the world and yet come right back to the place that they call home, which is in Mexico. And I look at how for millennia before the Europeans started settling on this land, those people from South America, Central America, and what we call the continental USA, they used to traverse back and forth. Those people are all related. And they used to come up here to what we call the United States now, and they had family here, and they would go down to Central America and South America, and they had family there. These are natives to this land, and they're used to doing exactly what they're doing now, which is before the borders were there, okay, which is crossing over. And they would cross over for a lot of different reasons, for trade. They would cross over it wasn't just trade, but they would also cross over for food. You know, when food became a little bit scarce, you know, we have the droughts and we have the floods and things like that. Those people would travel to another part of the land where they could get food. I tend to be a holistic thinker, right? So when I see these children crossing over the border, and I see these adults crossing over the border because they don't have food where they are. They can't afford to feed their families. They're in danger and you know, all the reasons why they have always crossed over. You know, so I just find it fascinating how human beings may not, again, family secrets, right? They may not remember why they do things, like, you know, they're doing things in the moment right now. This place is dangerous, we have to leave, we have to send the children away, or that kind of thing. We don't have food here, so we have to leave, and we have to send the children away because we're always trying to save our children, right? But we don't think about the bigger picture of how many times and how many generations and for how many generations did these people do that.
Right, and you're talking about the, you know, the story, the racial story, you know, what's happened to different races, you know, what's been some of our different experiences. And my favorite part, you say, well, why does it matter to know all this now, what happened 50, 100, 200 years ago? And my favorite part of your book really is, you know, talk about why does race literacy matter, is because knowing our history sets us free. And your quote, the Bible, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. And I love that sense of freedom, both in terms of us individually and how we relate to individual people. You know, someone we might run into on the street, a colleague we might work with, or, you know, someone who's a friend of ours. I think having a more grounding in race literacy just helps us understand more our own experience and the experience of people around us, and with a little bit more compassion and understanding, in a way that then creates bridges for people to live more full and rich lives.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's, you know, that ultimately that is, I mean, that's really the reason that I wrote the book, is because I really believe that we are here to create a better world. I think that's our charge. Every generation leaves behind a world that's better than the generation prior. I really believe that's why we're here. The thing is that when we don't have access to the information that we need to transform something that's been with us for a very, very long time, what happens is we keep repeating patterns of dysfunction. And again, no one's to blame, but it is the reality. And so I wrote the book because I want people to be aware of what they may not know and how what they may not know affects them, affects all of us, and how they can change that. I mean, the good news is that we, particularly today with the internet, we have access to so much information, and we are able to, we're better educated than we have been for a long time. We can get information from anywhere around the world in an instant. You know, so we actually can do this. We just have to decide that we want to do it, that it's important for us to do it. And then each one of us as an individual needs to take responsibility for how am I behaving when it comes to this particular topic? And what does this topic mean to me? Because I think, you know, again, because we look at it as such a big topic, I don't know what to do, or I don't want to touch it. And so we don't always give ourselves the opportunity to think creatively, but we can. And when we do that, we come up with new ideas and new ways of seeing the world from a new perspective. But we also need to remember that we're not alone in this, that this is a collective problem. I don't care if you came here eons ago, your family is native to this part of the world and has lived here for, you know, 100 generations, or if you just got here 3 weeks ago. This is our home. And how are we going to take care of it when it comes to this particular topic?
Right, exactly. So your book is called 11 Reasons to Become Race Literate, A Pocket Guide to a New Conversation. How can our listeners get a hold of that?
Sure. So the book is on Amazon. It's on Amazon Kindle. So, again, you can get access to it immediately. So here's something. A lot of people think you need a Kindle device to read Kindle books. You don't. Amazon has a free download, and so you can download it on your PC, on your Mac. You can download Kindle on your phone by going to the prospective store. So it's Android as a Play Store, and iPhone has their own store, and get a free download. And you can read it on your phone, you can read it on your PC, and so on and so forth. You just go on Amazon, and you just look for free Kindle download. The book itself you can get on Amazon.com, and in the search engine you just put in 11 reasons to become race literate. I mean, I'm going to read you the actual website, but it's a little bit long, and some folks may not.
Well, yeah, I should say it's only $3, right?
So
it's a great deal. It's a tremendous
absolutely.
Amount of information, beautifully written, on a critical topic, and only $3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to make it available as quickly as possible for people, because people are, you know, it's an election year and people are having a little bit of a difficult time right now with everything that's going on in the country, and you know, and some of that stuff is racial and racially charged. So I think it's important for people to have this information, to look at it, to read it, to think about it. And they can just look for 11 reasons to become race literate on Amazon. And the book is also, I decided that, you know, because some folks are actually around my age, and they prefer not to read something on a device. They like to have a book they can hold in their hand. So the book will be out on hard copy, or rather paperback, I should say. It'll be out on paperback in a couple of weeks, certainly by the end of June. And so it'll also be available on Amazon, so people will be able to have access to it that way as well. And, you know, I really wanted it to be a pocket guide, so, you know, they have certain sizes you can use. So it's not as small as I'd like for it to be, just a regular size book. But I do hope that people will take it into their office, that they will share it with friends. And actually, when you buy the book on Amazon, they allow you to loan it to another person. So that's another way to spread the word about the book. It's great to share with your teenage children, if you have teenagers particularly. it gives them a whole new perspective on this topic, and it begins their journey to become race literate. And the younger people do this work, the better off they are. And it can make a huge difference in their lives. So I know I have some folks that have written comments on the page, and they said that one person said she had her 16-year-old read it, her 16-year-old son read the book, because she thought it was that important. And so I'm hoping that more and more parents will read it and share it with their young people, that young people will share it with their teachers, that just people will spread the word the best way that they can, because I really believe that it can make a difference in the way that people think about this very, very important topic.
Absolutely. I think it's great for individuals, for families, for workplaces, and it's an easy and actually a fun read. And your book makes a compelling case about why it's good to become race literate. Once we decide we want to be race literate, how do we do that?
Well, a lot of it is learning and reading and researching. And by the way, if people have questions, they can also email me at 11reasons2beraceliterate@gmail.com. That's 11reasons2beraceliterate@gmail.com. You spell it just like you heard it. the first thing that people need to do is to just kind of decide if they want to remain in the position that they're in, which is a position of feeling fragile when this topic comes up, or angry or frustrated, or going into some kind of negative emotion, or just really being accepting of the fact that it is what it is, we have what we have, and looking at what can I do so that I'm no longer part of the problem, but more part of the solution. And a lot of what people can do is to research, to read, to have conversations with other people about this topic. Even if the conversation is, I really have a hard time with this topic. I really, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go with it. It doesn't make sense to me, or whatever it is. To just be completely legitimate, be authentic about where you are with the topic. And, just really start talking to people about what this means to you.
Right. And you call for, in the book, you call for a massive educational campaign in America focused on retelling the American story. And I know you have personally spent decades leading conversations on race. You've got your workshop, which is phenomenal. You've got your book now, The Pocket Guide. And your conclusion is that we need to have a massive educational campaign focused on retelling the American story. Why do you think that, and what would such an educational campaign look like?
Well, after doing this work for 25 years, the one missing link that I found is people just don't know enough about the American story. They really don't. It's very one-sided. It's very Eurocentric, and it leaves out all these other pieces. And without those other pieces, it's very difficult for people to make the leap, to really, really transform the way that they view race. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that if we are to have a truly educated populace, then we need to trust that people can handle the truth, and to be able to tell them that truth, and to know that people will do the right thing. And here's why I'm saying that. After years and years of doing this work, and I do, my seminar, as you know, because you've been to it, is a two-day intensive where, we really look at some history, and then I take people through the layers of healing and transformation, and one by one, the eight stages, and what that looks like, and what it feels like, and give people a lot of examples. And what I found was that people were transforming; they were making good decisions. And I say this because I would see people years later, and that short two day was still impacting them. In fact, this is really funny. I have a good friend from the time that I lived in Michigan, and I haven't seen her in almost 15 years. And she called me last year and was telling me how she ran into someone, and they were having a conversation, and my workshop came up. She was like, I went to that workshop. I know Milagro. She's my good friend, blah, blah, blah. And they had this wonderful conversation. But the person was telling her how she wished that more people would have access to that information, because it really helped to transform her life. And so when she sees things that happen on the news that are race-related, she doesn't react the same way as other members of her family react, or people who haven't had access to the information. And she mentioned how the most impactful part for her was the history and all the stuff that she didn't know about her own history in her own country. And so I just feel like it's really important for people to have some of that history, to be able to understand it, to be able to grapple with it and try to make some sense of it. And to really just be able to connect to that history from a different perspective. And just, you know, it's not an easy history, which is why it doesn't get told. It's difficult. But I think what it does is it helps to strengthen people. It takes away some of the fear that people have around that history. It gives them a grounding in truth, as opposed to myth. It helps them to connect the dots between yesterday and today, because we didn't just fall out of the sky one day. You know, we are a continuum. This generation is connected to the previous generation that's connected to the previous, and so on and so forth. And so understanding what some of those behaviors were, what people had to do to survive, all those kinds of things are just really, really important. And not telling those stories just keeps people mystified. It keeps them confused. It doesn't give them the opportunity to see themselves courageously, because it really takes courage to look at the ugly stuff of our past. It's not pretty. It's not pleasant. It takes courage to do it. But what people find, even just in their personal lives, what they find is when they actually let themselves do that, when they clear themselves by the knowing and the understanding of the story, they heal in a completely different way. They scar differently. Use a different scar tissue when you deal with the truth and you're able to clean the wound and to really, you know, just let it ooze and do all the ugly things that it has to do. Then when you reseal that wound, you really are healed, rather than continuing to cover it up and you know, throw stuff on it and take a quick pill so it doesn't hurt anymore, or, you know, just doing all the stuff that we do when we don't want to deal with something. Denial serves us, but it only serves us to a point. And beyond that, it doesn't take us any further, and it doesn't allow us to grow. The other reason I think we need a massive educational campaign is because there's a level of, you know, again, thinking holistically, there's a level of personal growth that doesn't happen when we are creating our lives on a false story. So, you know, you'll find that, for instance, a person who's been adopted and they thought that the people who raised them were their parents, and they suddenly find out the truth. They're very angry. They're very upset.
I thought they were their biological parents.
Yes,
they were the parents that raised them, but they weren't the biological parents.
They weren't the biological, and the person thought that those were their biological parents. So they grew up, they built their lives on a story that wasn't the truth. but there was always this kind of discomfort or something there that they couldn't quite put their finger on. When they finally find out that they're adopted, they're able to put all of that in perspective. And yes, they may get angry, and yes, they'll get upset, and so on and so forth. But the level of growth that happens from that moment on is very different, because now they're building their lives on the foundation of the truth rather than building their lives on a false story. So it is absolutely worthwhile to let people know what the truth is. The other thing is that it shows that you believe that that person can handle the truth, which is a form of saying, I trust you. I see you as an adult. I see you as someone who can handle the truth and all those wonderful things that people need to believe about themselves, rather than, I don't think you should know this story because it's not really a pretty story, and it's going to make me look bad if I tell you that I adopted you, rather than telling you the truth, you know, rather telling you that I'm, you know, letting you think I'm your biology when I'm really not, you know. So all of those kinds of things are just really important. So the telling of those stories allows people to put their lives in perspective, because people always have, you know, that kind of a sense of something's off, something's not right. And that's where the discomfort comes in when people talk about race. Everybody knows that there's something off. No one can quite put their finger on what it is. And it makes it very difficult to have a decent conversation if you know, everybody's uncomfortable around the topic. So a massive educational campaign that would include things like commercials on television, because we're very good at changing things. You know, when I first came to this country, I remember that was, I'm going to date myself really here, that was in the mid-60s. And I remember that they used to have all these horrible things that they would say, particularly about blonde women, how they weren't very bright and, you know, they were just pretty and empty head and all that kind of crazy stuff. Well, you know, we were able to change that within one generation. We were able to change that. We can change anything we want because we are just extraordinary beings. And once we make up our minds to do something, we can do it. So I don't know that we can change the race stuff in one generation, but we can certainly make it a whole lot better. A whole lot better. So
there have been some improvements in the past generation, and we still have a little way to go there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. I think a massive educational campaign on the American story and having a conversation around racial healing would be a good thing. I kind of regret that President Obama didn't help lead that from the White House. But, you know, he did us all a service by having his time in office there. But certainly we could do a lot more. Actually, I think probably the best way to do it would be if you would write up a guide to your workshop and then make that guide available to help guide the conversations, because I think how that conversation happens is going to really shape whether it's a good experience or kind of sets us back. And I think it might be a good thing, too, for you to train some people to help be facilitators in that conversation, you know, even if it's in person or on YouTube or however you do it, to kind of model what that is. We have about 7 minutes remaining, and I'm wondering if you would be, if it would work. I don't know this, but I'm suggesting it. Would it work to model a conversation like the kind of conversation you're calling for in communities around the country? Does it make sense to take, 5 minutes now and model something, or is that not enough?
Well, I don't know that we have enough time, but I can talk about just some basic things around having that conversation. I mean, we're having conversation about race. We've been having conversation about race for eons. The thing is that because the conversations are lacking in base information, some basic stuff, we keep repeating the same conversation, and people get wounded, and they get angry, and they walk out of the room, and all kinds of crazy things happen. So, you know, in thinking about how do we have just a general conversation? You know, someone says something Then someone can ask a question or someone else can add to that conversation by telling, you know, a little bit of their story or whatever themselves. And then the other person asks questions again, and we listen when we're having a conversation, and then we process that conversation, and we process it through our filter. So just in the telling, you know, what are you going to say? How do you start that story? You could start with your own story, with your own history. You know, no one can argue your history, because your history is yours and it belongs to you. And everyone has a history around race, like I said earlier, even if that history is, I never encountered someone of a different culture until I was in college, or whatever that is. You know, that's a reality for you. Asking questions, asking, you know, what was your upbringing like, and, you know, where did you grow up, and what were the issues of race that came up in your community or in your area, or what did you see on the news when you were growing up, or whatever, you know, anything like that can spark a conversation. Listening is really important, particularly when it comes to this topic, because some of us feel like we just don't get heard, which is why we keep repeating the same thing over and over again. People repeat things because they feel like they've not been heard. When people feel really heard, they don't feel like they need to keep repeating things, you know? So listening is extremely important. And then processing. How we think about this stuff is depends on what our filters are like. So everyone has filters, and everyone has filters around race, whether they want to admit it or not. And so what is in those filters determines how you will hear the conversation, what your input will be in that conversation, and how you will react to what you're hearing. And so understanding your own filters around race, like, you know, what are your trigger words around race? You know, what are your personal filters like? What are your beliefs, and what have been your experiences with race? Those are all things that make up our filters around race and determine what we will and will not hear, how we hear things, and how we react to what we're hearing. So those are just, you know, four of the basic components of a conversation. So the telling, the asking, the listening, and the processing. And if you can take that in context by having some background information, then your conversations on race will probably take on literally a different color. So, you know, you want to have some good background information, because, again, like I said, part of what happens is people just don't know enough about the topic to feel comfortable with the topic, to have a conversation that allows them to speak freely. And then the other thing is, how are we receiving that, the information that we're getting from someone? You know, and who's telling the story? Who's telling the story? Because remember that who tells the story is very important to how the story gets told, which is why the history is the way that the history is. Those who had access to being able to publish their story and to tell the story have told a very specific story. But if someone else were the ones telling the story, they might tell it a little bit differently because their experiences have been different. So, you know, keeping all of those things in mind as we explore this, because we talk a lot about race, but we don't always have good conversations. And in a good conversation, people either walk away neutral or empowered. If that's not happening, then something is off, and we need to figure out what that is and why that is.
Right, and that's why I love to see, you know, I appreciate this work about the 11 Reasons to Become Race Literate. I would invite you for your next work to do that guide to the conversation, because so many of the ones that are there just kind of seem stuck or don't go anywhere or make the problem worse, make people disempowered and angry, as opposed to, I know from personal experience in your seminar, people do feel kind of enlightened and empowered and positive about it. So maybe you could write up a guide for that national conversation.
That sounds like a great idea. I'm working on another short book, again, short, keep it short, and that book is about ways of being, and that includes having conversations. So I will definitely take you up on that and write some more about that conversation that needs to be had and how to have a good, empowering conversation about the issue of race.
That would be great. Hopefully, maybe we can get Ken Burns interested. If someone listening knows Ken Burns, I'd love to see him telling the American story with this lens in a way that's honest and healing. And you could do a companion guide to the PBS special. So let's hold open that possibility.
All right. It's wonderful. Thank you so very, very much. I really hope that the listeners will have found something interesting in the conversation. And I also hope that they will look for 11 reasons to become race literate and to share it with their friends, their children, their neighbors, and their parents. And hopefully we'll begin to talk about race from a different perspective.
That's great. Yeah, and the book is 11 Reasons to Become Race Literate, available now on Amazon. That's all the time we have. Milagros Phillips, thank you so much for being with us today and for all your great work.
Thank you so much, Eleanor.
In case you've missed any of these programs, they're available in the archives. If you like this program, please go to iTunes and like it there. If you want to learn more about Breakthrough Solutions, go to thebreakthroughway.com. Our theme song is Let's Give Them Something to Talk About, sung by Bonnie Raitt. I'll be back next week. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Eleanor LeCain with All Together Now.